Blog Talk Radio.
And coming out of that awesome lead guitar run from Pete Fry, this is Stephen Zimmer bringing you tonight the beginning of the Star Chamber Show Thanksgiving Special, episode number 192 here on a Wednesday evening, a nice and a windy Wednesday evening in Lexington, Kentucky, with up to 45-mile-an-hour winds, but I digress. We are ready to have a great show tonight, and I'm joined by co-hosts Daniel Dark and Michael West for the duration of the evening. Good evening, my friends. Happy Thanksgiving.
Good evening. Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm in a good mood.
Ready for Turkey Day, huh?
I am. I just want to say, Michael and Daniel, I finally had some good luck. My sister decided to stop by with some goodies for Thanksgiving dinner that we're having tomorrow. And guess what she brought over to me tonight, just in time for the show, a bottle of Four Roses, my friends. So yes, I guess Stephen has some good quality bourbon for once.
It should have been Wild Turkey because it's Turkey Day, man. You know,
right? Hey, I'm not complaining. I am not complaining. That was very, very kind of my sister. Yes.
Yes, it
is. And yes, I've got a bottle of Four Roses for our special show and. Tonight, I'll, of course, I'm not going to talk to you a lot about our guests just yet. It's going to be a different take on storytelling and character development. We're also going to be able to get into some good indie film, genre film, and things like that, but also the world of pro wrestling. And it's going to be awesome because I'm going to volunteer Michael to take on both of our guests tonight, a charity match at Imaginarium. So Michael's going to wrestle both of them at Imaginarium, I hope. That's our goal. But because I know Michael, that's his dream, you know, to have a wrestling bout at Imaginarium. So, but it's gonna be a fun show. Yeah, it'll be fun. We have never had guests from this world, on our show tonight. So in terms of our creative spectrum, our spectrum actually expands tonight. So it's a lot of fun, and the chat room is already getting active. We got Sandy Lender, got Amy McCorkle in there, and it's just starting to warm up here. And I think Sandy is actually. Also going to be drinking some Four Roses over ice tonight, so it looks like the Four Roses theme is catching on here on a Wednesday evening on the Star Chamber show. That's awesome. So, we are getting a little wind on the. I don't know which one of you guys is outside. We are. They're saying it on the chat room. They're hearing a little wind in the background or something. So, but
I was hearing the wind
inside, but you can hear the wind through the walls.
Yeah, it's not even windy down here right now, so we've had our rain come through, and it's calm as everything, and I'm sitting inside my office, so I did hear a little bit of feedback a while ago, though, so.
But, speaking of wind, we've almost had it's gale force winds here in Lexington. It's been crazy. I thought the house was going to blow over. I was working all night. This is a short business week for us, so I had to pull a near all-nighter last night, and I mean, I literally got like just a couple hours of sleep, and the wind just nuts here. It just felt like the house was going to blow over at any moment from late night throughout the early part of the day here, and according to my sister, the speed got up to like 45 miles an hour.
Well, we had 60 miles per hour gusts.
Yeah, something up there, so. Yeah, it felt pretty crazy. So I'm glad we're still standing, but if I'm a little loopy tonight in the show, I've had to compress like an entire work week in the last few days. So it's been less than fun on that front. So on that note, let's get some updates from you guys, because you probably have a lot of more exciting things than I have to share, because I've been staring at computer screens far too much.
Go for it, Michael.
Oh, okay. All right. It's been continuing to do work on multiple fronts. Got the novel that I'm still hammering away at, and the which threatens to be the longest thing I've ever written. Been listening to and approving not one but two separate audiobooks that are in production.
Cool.
And then over the weekend, I got a chance to meet Richard Dreyfuss, so that was fun.
Where were you over the weekend where you met him?
I was in Chicago.
Chicago, that's where you were.
Rosemont, Chicago.
Because I didn't know if you were at GalaxyCon, because that also occurred last weekend, and I know a lot of folks I know were there, and that was in Louisville.
I was seeing the GalaxyCon pictures come in over the weekend, but no, I was up at Days of the Dead in Chicago.
Yeah. So this wasn't a personal invitation to Richard's house or anything. It's just, you know.
No. Although he
never
he,
know about you, Michael.
A...
You fly under the radar pretty good right there. But you know, all the pictures that I see, you know, of all these different people that you're with.
I'm not gonna lie. I sometimes sit here in my office and look around and say, you know, damn. I live a pretty good life, but lots to be thankful for this year. But the wife and I went up there. We did get to hang out with friends. I got to chat with my friend Derek Mears, who many will know as Jason in Friday 13th from 2009, and most recently he was Swamp Thing. In the DC Universe show, which was unjustly and untimely canceled. So there's still holding out hope, though, that with the Blu-ray release and digital release in February, that there'll be lots of interest and maybe HBO, the new HBO streaming service or something like that, will pick it up. So fingers crossed on that, but if you're a fan of my favorite comic of all time is the Saga of the Swamp Thing run that Alan Moore wrote in the 80s, and this takes some of those storylines straight from the comic. It's funny talking to him, because he was telling me how when they came up to him, they were trying to decide what color contacts he should wear, whether it be red or black. And he says, honestly, he told the guys, he said, honestly, if you don't go with red, I may not be your guy. And they're like, what are we talking about? It's like going, you don't understand. Everyone who loves this comic is going to murder me if I don't have anything but red eyes. So they went with the red.
Yeah.
But it was a good time all the way around. The wife and I have grown very fond of the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant that's there at the hotel there in Rosemont. They have a really cool tradition now of anytime that there's a horror convention there at the hotel, they do a special horror-themed menu with menu items that are themed to the movies that the guests are in. And they come up with some really, really unique menu items that are really cool. So that's always fun.
Sounds interesting. What did they have this year? Do you remember any of them?
Well, they had shark tacos. Then they had it's called the Halloween Girls, because they had all three actresses who were in Rob Zombie's Halloween. Mm-hmm. That's what Steph and I split that. In addition to they have the Murray. If you're ever at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, there's only two that I know of. There's the one up in Rosemont, and then there's one at the golf course down in Florida. If you're ever at one of the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurants, you have to have the deep fried potato golf balls. And what they do is they basically take loaded mashed potatoes. So you got the cheese, you got the bacon, you got all that. And then they roll it in like a some sort of breading, and then they deep fry it, and mm-hmm. it is, and they serve it with like a horseradish dipping sauce, and it is amazing. It will clear your sinuses, but it is an amazing dish.
Oh, good,
very cool.
Good.
That is awesome. So, Daniel, how have you been real quick?
Still working on the next book. As you well know and people know, we turned in the second book in the Knife's Tale series and stuff, and that's gone through editing and waiting to hear back on anything on that. And then today I went and met with a college counselor, because I understand exactly where my personal challenges are with writing and everything, and I'm going back to school to try to correct some of that. So, you know, hopefully that will, you know, and that's one thing that I was told years ago is whatever your profession is, you know, leave about 10% of your income to enhance that profession somehow. You know, just so that you can improve yourself. And that's what I'm doing now, so. That's about it.
Well, hey, that's awesome, man. That's very good news. In addition to that, I do want to say real quick before we give our sponsors a spotlight here, Imaginarium's call for entries is open as of tonight. So, we will be making some major posts on that. But Film Freeway is our submission platform for all forms of short films, feature films, documentaries, music videos, and web series, and also and then with the International Screenwriters Association, you can submit non-produced screenplays for our screenplay awards as well, and that's open on both fronts, and we will be making official posts, but that is breaking news for the Star Chamber Show audience tonight, so that's one cool thing we do get to slip in there before we recognize our sponsors. And sorry, we got the a bit of a sinus thing going on here. But with our sponsors tonight, we have two. We have both Sandy Lender, and we also have Nathan Day tonight as our official show sponsors for the Thanksgiving special. So first, I will give you a spotlight on the amazing Sandy Lender. Fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. Then TimelessTeens.com went nuts for the Critters and her Dragons in Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. So thank you, Sandy. Thank you so much. We're very, very grateful to you always for your steadfast support of creatives and the creative path and for supporting the Star Chamber show. Thank you, Sandy, so much. And certainly
thank you.
You're part of our Thanksgiving. Yes. And then also we'd like to spotlight the amazing Nathan Day, the author of the Orphan Saga, and now he's got a new one out called The Devil's a Lie. They co-wrote with Thomas More. And here's a little bit from Nathan.
All that this does so based on one constant. God is in control. But what happens when the Lord of all creation is murdered and that control is lost? Will angels strike out against mankind in self-preservation as demons develop newer, more vicious schemes? And what of mankind? Will they survive this spiritual war they no longer can deny is real? Now the fate of all things hangs perilously in the balance. This is Orphan Surfacing.
And that's a little taste of the tone of his first novel in the Orphan Saga, Orphan Surfacing. We just recently announced Orphan Desecration and showed off an amazing cover for that that's coming out in later December. So thank you, Nathan, we want to spotlight you, definitely, and thank you for being the support of the Star Chamber show. So there we go. And it's definitely going to be a cool night. We should have our guests calling in here shortly. I think one is on deck here, and I'm hoping definitely going to go ahead and bring – I think I know who's on board here, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them in, or it might be both of them. So I will jump right into the particulars. But with tonight's show, like I said, we're going to bring you something a little bit different. So definitely fits in with characters and storytelling. And with one of them, I'll give you just a little bit of a teaser on. We've got a gentleman who has had over 5,000 matches. And he started in 1972 and has 21 Hall of Fame inductions. And of course, I'm talking about Bobo Brazil Jr. And he will be joining tonight a gentleman who also has been in quite a few matches in the wrestling world. Also as an actor and also does stunts and fight choreography and has appeared in 52 projects in the film and TV world. And then as a matter of fact, has worked with one of our recent guests, Demetrius Witherspoon. And I am, of course, talking about Thar Bad Blood. And I would like to welcome our guest tonight to the Star Chamber show. Your mic is on and you are live.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having us tonight. This is Thar.
This is Thar. Hey, Thar. Nice. Yeah, I was pretty sure that was you because I knew that was Indiana prefix on the phone number. So good to hear from you. And been hearing quite a bit from you from Holly. Because Holly is the one that talked to you about getting on the show tonight. So we've been looking forward to having you. And I hope that we have – is that Bobo on the other line?
Yes, it is.
Hello, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Yeah, I'll make sure we have both of you on.
Thank you.
And
yes, I'm here.
And tonight, yeah, we are excited because this is not, like I said, we do not often get a chance to explore the world of professional wrestling. And, you know, of course, on a show like ours, you know, we focus on the creative world, entertainment, storytelling, characters. And this is a cool thing because tonight you know, we're all three of us, Michael West, myself, and Daniel Dark, the co-host here, we're all writers. And so we're all immersed in characters and storytelling. So for us, this is a fun chance to kind of hopefully peek into your world and look into, you know, storytelling, characters, you know, the world of pro wrestling, all those kind of things from your perspective. And so with that, I'd like to just start, and either of you can start it off here, but talk a little bit about
your characters as pro wrestlers and what you're about in the pro wrestling world right now.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, you're the most experienced.
Yeah, since I have a longer career, I think my role in professional wrestling, that I'm a good guy, which is called a babyface. My job is to go in and please the crowd and let the bad guy get out of hand. I supposedly straighten him out, but I had to rejuvenate myself before I could get in there. I had to get all this together and put together, remakeover. I put it like that, make a short remakeover. I've been in the business, I'm an actor too. I've been in the business 47 years. I stayed in Japan for 3 weeks, and I had over 19 matches during those 3 weeks over there in Japan in 91. And I was in the strongman tournament. I wrestled for AWA, NWA, and I tag team partnered with Road Warrior Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors. I was lucky enough, MTW, Road Warrior Hawk, and I was the tag team champion. We took them back to Japan and fought them over New Japan. We fought and successfully came back home. And then that was in 94, because 91 I was over there FMW's Frontier Martial Art Wrestling. They all nation came, kickboxing, judo, just everything, any entertainment in the world, we was all together. We met over there in Tokyo, and we traveled in buses. I traveled on the train because as being a son of a legend, I was kind of stood out a little bit more than everybody else, and had two big boots to fill because everybody wanted to beat me because they never could beat Senior. Everybody wanted to beat Bobo Brazil Jr. when I got over there. And fortunately, that it was a long road. I'm going to be honest with you. It was a very long road. And when I came back, I supposed to have met Victor Bruiser. I know everybody knows the most dangerous wrestler in the world. He's supposed to be my tag team partner, but he passed away in 91. And then when I came back.
Who was that?
Victor Bruiser.
Okay.
He's the most dangerous wrestlers in the world. And then I came back to AWA and wrestled there for a while, MCIW, the likes of up under Nick Barkwinkle. I got a chance to wrestle Ric Flair, Central Illinois, went a solid hour with him in 89 and stuff. And all he could say was, "You're a good kid." After he'd beat the rest out of me for a whole hour. keeping the crowd up, trying to, you know, not lose my cool and stuff, and the man was just playing with me. He made a toy, but he was one heck of a work, I can say that. I learned a lot from him that night. And like I said, I've been IPW, that's, you know, International Pro Wrestling. I got a chance to meet some guys over there. So they was pretty cool guys. I came out on top tournament. I kept the belt. And when I went to Texas, World Class Championship Wrestling, I got a chance to wrestle with the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. We won against the Freebirds. And I ended up, I thought I was married to Buddy Robbins, Freebird Buddy Robbins. And every time we went in, when we did the tour around the world, I'm like, I'm still facing you. And then finally I got a chance to wrestle Beauty. That's one of the Garvins. I got a chance to wrestle him, and then Iceman Portion. They were just a lot of guys, and then I decided to come back and hook up with that MCW wrestling organization. Then I went back to WCW and tangled with a lot of guys over there. Tony Atlas and I end up having a little fuse of rail fuse, what you call a shoot. We got into it, and when I put him on the mat, I clamped him with a chokehold, and it took about six guys to pull me off it because I wasn't turning him loose. He was too big. I wasn't turning him loose. And then we went to Jamaica after that, and we was I got in trouble over there coming from Kingston. I stayed in Middletown, Jamaica. Then we came back to Kingston and had the show. And at the airport, I threw my bag at him. And when he reached to get my bag, I clipped him. He went down and he hit his head on the step. And when he hit his head on the step, I thought I was gone then. And the promoter, George Cannon, he had to get me out of jail. Because they thought I had killed him, you know, and they didn't ask no questions in Jamaica. They just start putting handcuffs on me and pushing me and going on. I'm like, what? This is a civil offense between us. But it wasn't, but George Cannon got me out of jail. And I came back and went to WWF at the time. And holy smoke, I looked up who was walking through the door, Tony Atlas. Vince Senior said, you guys either get along or I got to get rid of both of you. So we got along. I was ending up wrestling Jesse the Body, Mr. Fuji, John Studd, Big John Studd, and Adrian Davis, Adrian Adonis, Dick Murdoch was the tag champion. I met a guy named Red. We went against them, and then we got defeated that night and went to St. Louis, and Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson won the belt. That same night in the second taping, I had to face Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas. And I'm going like, man, I know I'm going to get the crap beat out of me. You know, here's Tony Atlas with those big old arms. And I have my 18-inch arms, and I'm like, man, I look like a little puppy to him. But Andre came out and told Tony Atlas, you either behave or I'm going to walk out there. And we had a good match. Although we got beat, but we had a good match. You know, I kind of took the bad end of that because Rocky put me down for the finish. Tony Atlas picked me up and put me in his finish. Yeah. And he said, let that be a lesson, boy. I go, okay, okay. You know, and I went on, like I said, I went on and got a chance to wrestle most of the guys and went back to AWA and on the tour and to Bill Irvin, him, the Long Riders, him and his brother, and went against them, and we come to a draw. We fought to a draw, a 60-minute time limit. And then Nick came in and said, I need you to wrestle Marty Jannetty on the next taping. And I said, okay. So Marty was a fine guy, but the Heartbreak Kid, everybody knows him, was too scared to get in the ring with the son of a legend. He goes, no, I'm not going to wrestle. He said, I'm not going to wrestle. And Nick told us to come on and said, we got you booked again. He said, I'm not going to wrestle him. I'll walk out for this. So I had to wrestle Marty again. And then Kirk Hennin, I got to wrestle him, Scott Hall. You know, and then I end up tagging with Larry Zbyszko. And every time we get in a good match, I go to draw back to hit a guy, hit Larry in the head. I go, like, what are you doing, man? He's standing behind me. He goes like, why you keep hitting me in the head? So we went to South Carolina. Vince said, I got to have you back. And if you look at my bylog, I had different names. Calypso Jim, Disco Dog, Jim Burke. Each organization you go into, Vince owned the copyright of your name. You have to change your name.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew I was the same guy, though. They knew until the old man, he got a little sickly there and gave me the copyrighted name. Now, before me, it was another Bo Jr. We tagged together, which was the oldest brother, Carl, but Carl wasn't able to carry the name. And I end up with the copyright of the name and carrying the name, and I asked guys like Apollo, you know, and stuff. And when I got back to Chicago, here I meet Van Vader, and I'm going like, who's this big guy? He's the guy going to crush you tonight. I got crushed in like 2 minutes. Now I said, okay. I got my butt handed to me on the silver platter on that one. I end up going back to TVW, which that was in 08. And I held the tag team belt at me and Dennis Cass. And then WWA came out, Bruiser Bellum. And I had a big run in that as a heavyweight champion and began to be the tag team champion. And everybody knows a Big Papa Puff, which is Scott Steiner. when I trained him, he was Rex Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
WCW, something. For me, they sent Scott Steiner there. And when he got there, they said, "You're not Clipso Jim. We want him." He came back. He said, "They didn't want me. They wanted you." But at the time, I had to go on a tour over in Canada. Dominic DiNuccio, the Samoans, and I ran all those guys, you know, Purple, Steinfurt, Curry, Jumping Jim Rozelle. Also, we traveling together and we wrestling, you know. And it just Jimmy Jack Funk and all of them. And I ran up on Terry Funk, which one of the nicest guys you ever want to see in the building. And to be in the business or even in a building with, he was just total professional.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I thought I was done with him, and then here I had to turn around and wrestle Dory Funk Jr. I'm going like, take me out of Texas, y'all. Just look like everybody wanted to beat that name. Everybody wanted to beat that name, you know. And I didn't understand because, you know, Bo Senior, he was the first black man that broke the baron to wrestle a white man to be the United States heavyweight champion. And for years, that was the only belt that looked like they wanted me to have. Like they were punishing me. You stay in the business, you're going to, every United States title I went for, out through the world, wherever I went. And I wrestled every champion that was from the United States, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, Germany, you name it, I was there to wrestle those. You're flying out this place, you're flying out that place. In this business, 47 years, I've been divorced 5 times. So when I got myself together and I came back to Indianapolis for a while before I went back to Michigan, I ended up wrestling a guy by the name of Dice Man Running Vegas. We had the biggest feud in Chicago that it ever was. King Kong Bundy was there. Jimmy Snooker, they said, "We can't catch that match. Why did you put them before us?" A month later, we was in Columbus, Ohio. Snooker looked out there and said, "No, put me on before them because we would not be able to catch that match." I was a high flyer, and I put 100% into the business everywhere I went because that's what I always was told by Leaping Lanny's father. I worked for them in Missouri. So Angelo Popolo told me that wherever you go, son, he said, you give it your best if you want to be in this business. If you want to make a living out of this business, you give it your best. And that I took his word, and that's what I did. I gave my best. And I didn't wrestle guys like the Chief Alakula Kula, the Valiant Brothers. And Jimmy and I were 6-man tag team with a guy by the name of P-Boat. Out of Evansville, we was all 6-man tag team till people had to go home for a while. And then I started tagging with Dick DeRuza Jr. About my 30th year in the business, I trained him. I started tagging with him. And then I left him. I had so many tag team partners, Andy Shane. And then there we go, the Powerbomb Championship wrestler. As soon as I stepped in the ring with the guy, I beat him. Took the championship away from him. Held the belt for 3.5 years. Something you might not believe, I had a stroke in 2011. Two heart attacks. 2015, I was back in the ring wrestling again.
Wow.
Busted my knee up.
Wow.
I had to get a knee. Replacement. July the 1st, 2015. September the 3rd, I was back in the ring wrestling 2015. And I went from there to CCW Classic Championship Wrestling, which is in Marion, Ohio, and took the belt from Ox Baker and then had the belt ever since. I gave Ox Baker his last match. He died after I took the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, so that I went on and started wrestling for MCIW New Breed. I've been the heavyweight champion several times. Got beat a couple times. I ended up coming back strong. taking the belt. And then I ended up doing a movie about Shirley Chisholm. I was her bodyguard in the movie. And then I said, wow, what's going to come next? After being her bodyguard. And I sort of read the book and I sort of thought, I go, gee, I was bigger than her bodyguard in the movie. Her bodyguard wasn't bigger than I was. I'm the one that saved after she attempted to get stabbed. I rescued her and took her out. We took her to the hospital and got her in a safe spot and everything. So it was very innocent after the years. And now I'm giving back to the company now because I wrestled a guy in AWA in Nashville. I wrestled a guy by the name of Mike Wood. He was their champion and stuff. And I went in there and took that belt from him. And I continued. Ox Harley and all of them for Who You Pro. Just everywhere I went, I was taking belts. I'm no stranger to a championship belt. It's just that's the way I was trained to just get in and go. You know, after wrestling guys like Lou Fast and just wrestling him, you know, and he twisted.
So you remember the Phyllises, don't you?
Oh yeah. Yes,
Nick,
I do.
Nick Goulas and all them.
Nick Goulas, yes, his son George Goulas. We used to pull pranks on him all the time. His main word, my daddy told me to win. We go, okay. Your daddy told you to win, right? We would tie his boots together. and every time he'd get up to swing at us, he would fall. And I go like, get up, what are you doing? You don't supposed to be on the mat. He said, I'm going to tell my dad a few. So, of course, when we get in the back, we get shortchanged. We're making a joke out of ourselves in the ring. You know, still getting paid the regular money. We was all cut $10 for joking in the ring. And then I go to Memphis. I wrestle Jackie Fargo. I get a chance to get booked against Lawler, but he didn't wrestle me. So I would come in and wrestle him. And they had a good match, and that night I had to go against Phil Hickerson. And so I got dusted there that night. But all the rest of the guys that went before me besides Phil Hickerson, Jerry Law, and Jackie Fargo, they was looking up at the lights. Because when I got in there, I went one of them. And Coastin Kingston got the style that I had. Right today with the braids in his hair and everything, which I still wrestle with braids in my hair, but Colton Kingston took the coffee style on me. I was the first one that got my hair cut after Tina Turner, Aretha Franklin, and Gladys Knight braided my hair 14 miles of Brandeis, Dearborn, Michigan, at the Premier Center. I got my hair cut that night. I look on TV, on Vince TV, 2 months later, Andre getting his hair cut. It was the Animated Fuse. Eclipso Jim was the biggest fuse and the most selling, video selling that it was. My comic book sold, my video book sold, and I'm like, man, just look like I'm in Japan making all this money again. And then all of a sudden, I lost my sister. My father, he wasn't interested. We was tagging together again, and he wasn't interested no more. And he went downhill from then, and I had to pick the name up and go on. And, man, the people that wanted to beat me, like every arena I stepped in, they gave me the toughest guy that they had. I mean, I went through some guys I never heard on the market before, and a lot of champions, Greg the Hammer, Valentine, and all of them, I wrestled them. Every last one, everybody came, Jesse the Body and all of them. I got a chance to page with them out through the years. I was looking at my bylaw the other day. I had 5,000 matches in 47 years.
Wow.
I said, I couldn't really believe it. I'm sitting up there. I told my wife, I said, wow. She said, yeah, you used to go when I married you 20 years ago. I said, we was on the road 3-4 nights a week. Then we went to 5 nights a week like we didn't have a home. I have wrestled 300 days out of a year for 5 years without going home. 300 days.
Mm. Wow.
Yes, it's been a long road, but I'm still here and still kicking thanks to the help of the good Lord. And still wrestling, still holding the championship right today. And I'm
Who are you wrestling for now?
Kind of proud of myself. PWK and MCIW, New Breed / Hotshot Wrestler. And any organization that really calls me, Powerbomb Championship Wrestling out of Toledo, International Big Time Wrestling, up in Detroit. I'm a 21-time Hall of Famer when I got inducted into the Hall of Fame in Detroit, which made me 21 times. I mean, I've been all over the world wrestling. I wrestle for an organization that I never heard before. Philadelphia, state of Philadelphia, was up there with Soul City Wrestling. I stayed up about a year wrestling and doing a lot of booking and stuff, bringing guys in from Texas and stuff. And one person that I really didn't get a chance to do nothing but tag with, and I really wanted to wrestle, Dino Bravo. I really wanted to wrestle with him. But I didn't get a chance to tag. I believe I could have gave him a run for his money. Out of all them years, I said, wow. But wrestling's been good. Now, we give it back. You know, I got a chance to hook with that AWA Supreme and took every championship they had there. Single, tag team, a TV title. It's the same thing they put up. When they knew I was coming to town, they had a sold out arena.
Wow, that's amazing.
Lights of a lot of people. What's that in?
Well, it's like we lost several down here in Nashville area. Rick Rude and Tojo Yanomoto and some of the other ones.
Yeah, I got a chance to wrestle Tojo, Gypsy Joe. I know all them guys down there. I had a lot of fun. I remember when Gypsy Joe got his toe cut off, he told the doctor, he said, give me my toe. I want to put it right for put a chain on it and put it around my neck and wear
it.
Yeah, Gypsy, he was something else.
Bill Dundee really was a coach that we had down here for a while. He had his own training camp.
Yeah, he knows me well. We tagged together a lot. You know what he used to tell me when I walked in the dressing room? Hey, Bobo, I don't feel too bad now. I feel like I'm not the oldest guy in here. You oldest, I don't know what. I said, Bill, you got me about a couple of years. Hey, Tally, he said, love you. Glad to see you again. Bill was a nice guy. His son, Jamie, worked for me. Lala's son worked for me. I was running my own promotion. Grandma Sexy came in. Matter of fact, 2 weeks before he got locked up and killed himself, or they took his life, he didn't kill himself. And I don't believe a man could hang himself in the cell with a sheet that don't hold him. He had called his father that night and told him that if you don't get me out, they're going to kill me. You know, and it was a sad tragedy that happened to him. But when you get in this business like that, you got a lot of enemies. A lot of enemies. You just don't know it. You have a lot of them.
Oh, man. Well, on the positive side, though, imagine over the course of 5,000 matches and all, I mean, you develop some, you know, really amazing fans and you inspire them. I mean, we were talking earlier, one of our co-authors that are with us, Stephen Shrewsbury, he lives in Illinois now. He grew up watching you and was a big fan of yours when you were wrestling AWA. Looking back, I mean, you've got to feel good about all the joy and lives you've touched and the fans that, you know, you've come to have, you know, like Stephen and others throughout the years, some you may never have met. I mean, but I'm sure that, you know, like I said, you know, that's a very special part of your journey as a wrestler is the fans and their loyalty and interaction with you.
Yeah, because you say you're in Chicago. See, in Chicago, we wrestled on Bob Luce TV. He's a guy that had a collar. He did collar commercials. And it was a police officer in Chicago. When I got ready, it was an amazing story. When I got ready to go to Japan, I'm in Chicago at the airport. And they flew us from Indianapolis to Chicago to get ready to mount to take a long 13-hour trip to Japan. This police officer walked up to me and introduced his wife was a boxer. She was a good boxer. Chris was a good boxer. And he said, I want you to take care of my wife. And I turned and looked at him. I said, who? He said, you. He said, you're an old school Calypso Jim, right? I said, yeah. He said, I want you to take care of my wife. Now, here I'm on the plane going to a place that I don't know nothing about, a foreign country, a land, the rising sun, I don't know nothing. Here I got this blonde with me, and she said, when I stepped off the plane, when everybody was looking, America was looking at me like, wow, man, he's cool. It wasn't even none of my wife. It wasn't none of my girlfriend. I was like, she ended up taking care of me over there. You know, we go out to eat stuff. She was right there. We went to Hard Rock Cafe. She was right there. You know, every picture was taken. I was showing Thor. She's right there. You know, she would not leave my side. You know, and that's funny you mentioned Chicago, and I thought about that. I go like, wow, man. Whew. Man, there was a day. A police officer walks up and asks you to take care of his wife. I started telling him, who's going to take care of me? But I met a lot of people over there. I met a German team. Oh, they was hilarious. We swapped $5 bills. You know, I got one of the German $5 bills. Now, same one. I gave him American one. I put my bill, my $5 bill matching his, and his $5 bill was a lot smaller than mine. His $5 bill looked like it was fake. I said, you sure this is for real? He said, yeah, it is. Because when I was in service, I was over in Ravenburg, Germany, West Germany.
Yeah. That's a good story. That is. And, Thar, let's get you in here a little bit in the conversation. Let's catch up everybody on your career as well.
Well, it hasn't been that illustrious, let me tell you. I've only been back in it about 5 years. I originally started back in 1990. My first trainers was Dick the Bruiser and Mitsu Arakawa. And I got into wrestling because my dad and Bruiser were friends as I was growing up. My dad worked at the wrestling matches. He was a police officer, and he would escort Calypso Jim, who is now Bobo Brazil Jr., Bo Sr., Bobby Heenan, Pretty Boy Bobby Heenan, Moose Sherlock. He would escort him from the locker rooms out to the ring. So my dad would take me, and I'd sit in the front row, and I got to meet all the wrestlers growing up. So as I got older, I called my dad. I said, hey, you know, I'd like to try to be a wrestler. So he says, well, here's Dick's number. Call and tell him. That's on you. So I called. I talked to him. He said, well, yeah, come on over, kid. We'll teach you some stuff. Come on over. So I went to where he lived, and he trained me. Redbone would be there, Mitsu. Once in a while, some of the other wrestlers would come in. We train either Bruiser's house or at the Tyndall Armory downtown. And then when Bruiser passed away, that was kind of the end of the training for right then. And 5 years ago, a friend was going to start his own wrestling federation, and he asked, hey, would you like to come in, finish up your training, get back into it? I was like, man, I'm 57 years old. It's been 25 plus years. So I found at one point was my tag team partner. We renewed the Bad Blood name that I started, came up with in 1990. I brought back Thar, which was originally my name in 1990. And we started wrestling and training, and about a year into it, I met my best friend, who's on the other line, Bobo Brazil Jr. We started wrestling for MCIW. He started training me in the ring and how to handle myself in the business outside the ring. And I've held tag team titles, single titles, I've wrestled in Tennessee, all over Indiana, Toledo, Ohio, thanks to Bo up in Detroit at Big Time International Wrestling. And so here I am today wrestling, and I hope I can continue for at least a few more years. So
well, hopefully
that's my wrestling story.
Yeah, because you I even saw where you have a connection to a filmmaker that we know and love too, and it sounds like you're busy in the film and TV world too. And I'm speaking, of course, of our friend Demetrius Witherspoon of the Submerge series. And talk to me a little bit maybe about that, and maybe Boa as well, about the opportunities that you get in as wrestlers in the film and TV world.
Well, it was funny on Demetrius. He was holding auditions for Submerge Nairi. And I went and I auditioned for the character of Raz. And he ended up casting a great actor and previous wrestler himself, Bishop Stevens.
Yep.
And so Demetrius contacted me afterwards, and he said, hey, he says, I see you've done some fight choreography and some of the other independent films you've been in. And I said, yeah, I have. I said, you know, I've had martial arts and the wrestling and some gymnastics and so forth and so on. And he says, well, would you like to choreograph some fight scenes for me and, you know, stand in as one of the soldiers for Raz? I said, yeah, I'd be more than happy to. So he told me, gave me the script. I found the fight scenes, envisioned what it would look like, storyboarded it, showed it to him. Matter of fact, I was kind of acting out the fight scenes in a McDonald's, so I probably look like a fool. But
been there, done that.
So he liked it, so he said, yeah, let's go with it. And so I got with the actors and actresses, worked with them on the fight scenes and what we needed to do, and we got it done. The next one was Submerge Echo 51, I believe it was. And he had another wonderful actor previously to play a part in it as 51, which is a like a cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
And right before we started filming, the actor had to drop out of the production, and so Demetrius cast another actor. This actor, great young man, he caught on very well. He was in his 20s and had never been in a fist fight. He had never had martial arts. He had never had boxing. So I had to basically teach him to make a punch look right, to make a kick look right. And so we met at a city park, and the day that we met, the actress that he was to work with couldn't be there. So I had to grab another guy that was like 6'1 and 240 pounds, fill in for a girl that's 5'6, so
oh,
this
wow.
actor could learn the fight scenes.
Well, you got boot camp.
So
yeah.
Yeah, so we're out in this park rolling around, and I had just got done having shoulder surgery and wasn't really supposed to be doing any kind of physical anything. but there was a few times that I said, no, 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 you're not doing it right. Come here, let me show you. And so I went ahead and did it. I'm hard-headed, but they got the – he got it all down. They got the movie down, and yeah, I'm proud of Demetrius. He's worked hard, so he's
oh, yes, he
I'm proud of him.
That's
prior
awesome.
To that, I worked with Terrence Muncie in Hell Walks 1 and 2, which I play the lead, Sheriff Lucas. I had a small few-second scene in The Batman, The Dark Knight. I actually point up and say, "Get down," as Aaron Eckhart, who plays Two-Face, walks past me and jumps in an ambulance. And then Aaron is sitting inside the ambulance. The Joker's man's handcuffed, and you see me push two girls away from the back of the ambulance. So
very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, it was fun. Wow. I got to meet Heath Ledger and Gary Oldman and Aaron Eckhart, Christopher Nolan, the director. And so it was pretty cool. Even got to sit on the bat bike, and I've got a cartilage that the range master there allowed me to have from where the Joker was shooting the machine gun walking down the street.
Oh,
so,
very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was neat. And then I got to be extra on ER with Angela Bassett for two episodes and George Clooney for one.
Yeah.
A&E's The Beast with Patrick Swayze right before he passed away. I was an extra on Contagion in a scene where Kate Winslet walks out through some revolving doors. I was like standing off to the side, so like if you blink for like half a second, you've completely missed me. I even froze it, and I'm like, there I am, and everybody's like, where? I'm there. See that shoulder there? That's my shoulder. That's me. So, I did a Boost Mobile commercial with Danica Patrick. Where all the guys are wearing skirts and high heels. It was on, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago.
I remember.
And then, I was the a congressman / assassin in Kimberly Stevens' production of Shirley Chisholm that we filmed here in Indianapolis.
Hmm.
And that's just some of the stuff that, you know, I've kind of done in the acting business. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, because speaking as a director myself, I have had the opportunity to work with a few people that you might know. I did a short film called Swordbearer a few years back and got the chance to work a little with Al Snow. Had a major fight scene in that.
My recent
project, Raiden Valkyrie Saga of Lionheart, I did get to work with Bishop Stevens. He was in my cast in that as one of the ensemble of warriors. And the thing that I found in working with both of them is that I think most directors should definitely take my advice on this. But working with wrestlers, you guys have just bring an authentic physicality that is really, like I said, it's something that, the average actor – just can't just bring onto a set. I mean, it's a presence. It's a feel. It's definitely something that's kind of intangible that I've noticed. When working with like I said, pro wrestlers like Al and Bishop. But that's definitely something that I think more directors should take advantage of, because you're used to performance and physicality and presence. And
right.
I mean, it's definitely, it seems to be a natural segue, between the pro wrestling world and entertainment mediums like TV and film. I mean, definitely. So,
you see it a lot right now, too. The Rock, John Cena, Triple H has done a couple things, Stone Cold. So,
most definitely.
Yeah, I didn't know Triple H had many shows that he had out. I seen one the other night, where he got out of penitentiary and folks been coming home. It's starting, not just dipping in, cutting you guys, but you mentioned Al Snow. Don't you know I see him every other day?
Oh, very cool. Yeah, he was great
to work with. He owns OVW, the wrestling organization in Louisville now.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Live. Yeah, he owns OVW.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. He was a pleasure to work with, and just a true professional. And is that something that you also get into, Bobo? As far as the film roles, or do you get into that, or is that something you explore too?
Oh yes, yes. I did that Shirley Chisholm, and also Bruiser made the first movie about the wrestler, and him and the Crusher got into it with the producer. After we got paid, they never showed the movie. Somebody else made the movie. Yes, I did. I got paid. That's one thing. Yes, I went to do another movie. Me and Thor supposed to be went to Georgia to be in an acting movie with AJ Styles and AJ, CM Punk wife. But the guy had everything going, and then all of a sudden she had to go to Japan, and CM Punk went kickboxing and stuff, you know, MMA, and so they shut it down. And he called me the other day and told me, he said, "Hey, can we do that all over again?" I go, "We don't have AJ. We can't do that." So I told him, "Call Thor." I said, "Thor," I called him, because we're both police officers.
So,
man, it's kind of rough, but you know, I would love to do it again. I really would. Like I said, we really are actors, you know, because we got scripts to go by sometimes, you know, and stuff. Because when I was in the WWF, everything was stripped out. You had so many minutes to do this. You had so many minutes. And if you wanted to see something really funny, let somebody messed up, you know, in the movies. I worked with Jackie Chan a little bit and got a chance to work with Chuck Norris over in Fort Knox.
Wow.
You know, you can laugh and go, you mess up, but when you're doing a stripping wrestling, you can't mess up. You're like a zombie. You're walking back and forth, planting it into your head. So you just go out there and everything, just like in the movie, just go at it because you got everything done. That's the only difference in wrestling and doing the movie. The movie, you can joke with one another and stop, but you can't do it in wrestling.
Right. As far as exploring personas in wrestling, this is something I've been very curious about all through the years. Talk to me a little bit, both of you, about how you develop your the character that you are on screen, you know, on in a wrestling sense, your persona, who the character is. You know, how do you evolve and develop that? And what's your two approaches, both of you?
Go ahead.
I developed, like I said, as being a good guy, and I have wrestled as a bad guy. When people see me wrestling as the bad guy, which in wrestling terms, it's a baby face and a heel, which is baby face is a good guy, the heel is a bad guy. So I made a lot of people cry because I had developed a character over 20-some years, but at 30 years, has been a good guy. Pleasing the kids, kissing babies and stuff, you know, hugging ladies and stuff. And all of a sudden, they see me be this bad guy. But I had developed so much good in me. I still wrestled the same, but I looked at more meaner. We had to live with that, and you had to eat that. You know, you had to wake up with that on your mind, just like you're waking up, taking a shower, putting clothes on every day. You have to do that with wrestling. You know, you have to live wrestling, sleep wrestling, eat wrestling, continue to do that. You know, that's all on your mind. You're walking, everything is going over what you want to do. And, you know, you got to, if you're the bad guy, you got to act the character like, get away from me, don't talk to me. And that's a scary thing when you're out there in the street because somebody can really get away and blow you away. But a good guy, we always smiling and talking, being humble, you know, and stuff. That's the part I like about being a good guy. You never get too many people mad at you that way. You know, sometimes you get tired of, you get writer's cramp. I ever got writer's cramp. I had a magazine out of Japan, my comic books, and Larry and I was in the comic book with Demetrius. We went to the convention, and our picture was in the comic book. You know, and you stand there, and we sold a lot of books. We did. We sold a lot of books. We sent them signing autographs. We said, like, man, I wish they would just slow down a little bit so I can go get a drink of water or go take a bathroom break. But you don't get that. You got to continue to live that character. You have to live that character.
Yeah, I enjoy doing it, signing autographs, taking pictures. My my character was is based on Road Warrior Hawk, the Road Warriors back in the 80s. I've got my own personality, my own look, my own style, but everything was kind of based on the way they was in the ring. I'm considered a face, but if I'm wrestling somebody that starts doing underhanded things in the ring, I too will do underhanded things in the ring. And if they want to get outside the ring to try to escape, I'll come after them. If they want to run to the bathroom, I'm coming after them. They go down to the Walmart,
yep,
and it's a match, I'm coming after them.
I've seen him do it.
But it's you know, we tried to give back a lot of stuff to the community. Also, we've done meet and greets down at Riley Hospital for children. On our own dime, we went up to Shriners Hospital in Chicago and signed autographs, took pictures with the kids, let them wear our belts and take pictures with the belts. We did a Make-A-Wish Foundation for a young lady that was 9 years old at one of our shows. We've done supply drives and fundraisers for schools and for the hungry at different various locations and everything. I don't want to say the names because I don't want to upset your sponsors or vice versa. but places contact us and say, hey, we'd like to do a fundraiser or a meet and greet to raise canned foods for Gleaner's Food Bank. Would you guys be interested? So we go out, we put on our wrestling gear, we bring our belts, we sign autographs, we take pictures, we bring canned food supplies, we ask our fans to please show up, bring some cans, help out some needy people. We've done it for School 34, where I actually went to grade school at, and raised some school supplies for them. So MCIW, Thar, Bobo, and some of the other superstars, we try to help out and give back to the community.
Oh, yes.
Great.
And that name, Bobo, begins to be a household name. I tell you a little something, and then I'm going to stop and let y'all talk. My other part of character, when I get in the ring, I'm known as chopping people and headbutting. When I chop you, you hear it all over the audience. And all they do is chopping one more time. Then you're going to hear my wife, if you don't chop him harder, you're going to sleep on the couch. Well, buddy, you're in trouble. I'm not sleeping on the couch. Yeah. And any ring I step in, when my music plays, and I get in the ring, they chop him, chop him, chop him. I think that my opponents get scared. He doesn't want to do much. Because he know those chops coming, and they come heavy. You know, I'm 6'2", 302 pounds, and I can throw that right hand pretty good.
Nice. Well, Michael Daniel, I know I've been hogging most of the questions tonight. So, yeah, please do dive in if you got some stuff you want to pick their brains on.
Well, I know Dick the Bruiser used to say that he had as many stitches in his head as a basketball. And just wondered you know, how many injuries have you had with related to wrestling over the years, and I know you spoke about, you know, some other problems that you had, but how many, you know, it's, you know, you always hear people say, oh, it's fake, but there's a lot of real physicality to it. How hard was it to, you know, how many injuries did you have and how hard was it to recover?
This might sound strange, but I didn't have none.
Really?
Not none from wrestling at all.
Wow.
Over 47 years, I never got hurt because I was trained the right way. I was trained how to fall, and I was trained that when pressure came, go with it. If you didn't, you're going to break something. So I always went with it, and that's why I wrestled so many champions because they thought I was one of the smoothest wrestlers in the world. They just know I was trained not to get hurt, and so that's what I did. And I showed Thor that a couple of times. But you could, no matter how big you and bad you are, there's somebody that knows how to put a pressure point on you, so you go with it to get out of it to keep from getting hurt. And I did that, you know, for 47 years. Never got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Never got hurt at all.
Now, the only time that I've been hurt wrestling is because of something stupid I've done, and my age comes back on me the next day and goes, that wasn't the smartest thing. you know, I've somewhat pulled a hamstring. You know, I've got bumps and bruises from, you know, landing on the concrete or hitting this or hitting that. But luckily, knock on wood, I'm pounding on my head right now. Really haven't broke anything or done any serious damage. But it's happened, you know, to other wrestlers that we know. You know, it is dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
You're taking a risk every time you walk out in the ring because the other guy may have a chip on his shoulder. He may be mad at his significant other, or his head may not be in the game that night, or he just may have a, oops, something happened.
Right.
But everybody tries to, you know, like any job, you try not to get hurt. Sometimes it does. I have not yet been majorly hurt, knock on wood, and I hope it doesn't happen throughout my career. So,
well, how much of a wrestler's persona is of the wrestler's own making, and how much of it is from the federation or the promoters?
You have a 60-40 there.
Okay.
You got 60, the promoter got 40 because you can go in non-wrestle-related or you can go in wrestle-related. A promoter gives you the idea, and you got to act your character out to be able to motivate yourself for that show to get highlights and moves. Most of those moves you see, they have that in mind for them to be able to announce or to have something to talk about. That's what you really have to go in there and do. That's why we have to do 60%. And you really got to go in there and you know, and do it. And that's why I say I learned how to do it the right way and stuff. So I would never have to go back in the dressing room and sit there and talk to Vince either. Nick Goulas, listen to his son, George Goulas, Holiday, or either Eddie Marlin or those guys, Dick the Bruiser, because I go out knowing what to give them. The promoter gives you ideas just like a producer does. They go in and say, we want this movie to be like this. And you got to have the idea to know exactly what to do. So that's why we have to have 60%. We give 60%. Because when you go in, let me give you an example. If you go in and you were sitting down and you said, Bo, make me laugh. So I had to come up with something that would really make you fall on the floor laughing. And then you would say, this is what I want. So that's the 40% that he's giving you. You done gave him 60%. Because a light that went off in his head that I can make money off of this kid. If that light don't go off in that head, your 60% goes to 20%, you're in the back of the line.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And much like acting, you have to stay in character all the time. If you're out there in that ring and you break what your character normally is, the fans are not going to take you seriously. Your opponent is not going to take you seriously.
Right.
Right. Mostly, it's a thing that we got is a handshake. If you squeeze my hand, I don't want to wrestle. And when I lock up with a person, which is a referee hold, we go into a referee hold. If you're a little bit heavy, I'm not going to wrestle you because somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's not been trained right. Somebody's temper is going to fly. When I get in the ring, sometimes it's just like, during the movie, guy said, wow, man, that was fun. I didn't feel nothing. Now, I am a number one shooter. I can make you feel every move that I put on you, but I don't do that. I stay with the 60% to please the people and get announced or something, shout and holler about and make the promoter smile.
Very cool.
So, have you ever had to get in the ring with somebody who was really intent on hurting you?
Oh yeah, yeah. I got in the ring with a lot of people. So, like I said, I know pressure. I'm a kickboxer too. So I know a lot of pressure points to hit you with, and you'll feel it the next day. I got in the ring with them. They'd say, "I just want to." Bo, you chop me that hard again, man. I'm going to knock your head off. I'll chop you that hard again. I have chopped blood out of people's chest. And when you come at me, I already know you're angry. I'm putting you down on the mat. You know, real quick.
Yeah.
I have several moves I can
make. Let me tell you something real quick. Bo chopped one guy, chopped him one time. The guy peed and pooped his pants. Jumped out of the ring and took off running to the back. One time.
Oh, man. That's good.
Yeah, oh, I did that.
So, yeah, you don't want to be on the receiving end of his chops if at all possible.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on it?
Say that again. Would you talk to me or Larry?
I was talking to him. If he'd ever been on your chop.
Yeah.
Oh,
when,
yeah,
when.
I can answer that.
Yeah.
I can answer that. Yes, he has.
Yes. Let me tell you guys a story. We were doing a wrestling show for a nursing home for all the residents at the nursing home. And Bo come out and he sticks his hand out to shake my hand. And so I started to shake his hand. I pulled my hand back. I go, should I? Should I? And everybody's like, no, don't trust him. Don't trust him. Don't trust him. So Bo goes, I'm a nice guy. You be quiet. So he sticks his hand out again. I go to shake his hand. Stop. Just before I touch his hand, pull back, I go, I shouldn't. Everybody was screaming, no, don't do it, don't do it. At that second, mentally, I went back to when I was 9 and 10 years old, sitting in that front row behind the barricades, behind my dad, watching Bruiser and Bobo and Cactus and Calypso and all of them in the ring doing that exact same thing. And it was a cool feeling personally for me to see that as a kid and then personally get the opportunity to do it in the ring with somebody that I admire. So
very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Daniel?
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the questions that I had is, y'all played both parts, right? Good guys and bad guys.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
Good guys and bad guys.
When when you're playing the bad guys, have you ever gotten into it with a patron?
Oh, yeah, I have. In Toledo, Ohio. I got in my face and you cheated. You cheated. You no good. I used to love you, Bo. You no good. I said, get out of my face. Get out of my face right now. And then I had a lady want to come over and choke me. She was booing. I told her, what are you booing about? She said, you. I said, you didn't say that last night. Ask your husband. Boy, she got so mad. He laughed. He know I was joking with, but she got so mad that she wanted to climb over the rail and choke me. And I'm hiding behind the manager and stuff, and her husband's trying to hold her back. Yes. I got attacked by one, and Dr. Jerry Graham pulled me just in time to keep him getting cut.
Wow. Well,
that's how angry she got. We's in Huntington, Indiana, down by Fort Wayne. This lady had got so mad because Ralphie wasn't going the way that she thought it was going to go, and she couldn't get nothing right. And when I hit that crowd, he told me, he said, move, Bo, move. And I'm standing there, and he just snatched me. And she had a straight razor. You ever see straight that people shave with?
Yeah,
she would have put a mean scar on my back, man. She would hit me with that.
Mm.
So I kind of like told the promoter, look, I want to go back being a good guy. I don't want to be a bad guy this time. Yeah, we have made fans, and I was in Sandusky, Ohio, one time, and I was a good guy. Bulldog Don Kitt won the Fabulous Kangaroo. He was wrestling. Me, him, and Dr. Jerry Graham was wrestling, and. The older lady told us that don't hit him no more. And so Kent loved it. When the Fabulous Kangaroos, he got me in the ring. He said, ping, ping. I mean, he was landing in my stomach, man. I mean, hit me in the chest. I said, man, I feel like cold running down. You know, somebody hit you, got a cold, seemed like a drain. That's how hard he was hitting. That lady got up and fired her pistol about 3 times, and we all trying to get up under the ring to keep him getting hit. Fans in the stand running. We was at a fair. Fans in the stand running and going on. It was a big lawsuit about that. It was a paper for a long time. I'm hiding up under the ring and he's going like, get over. I said, no, I'm not getting over. All four of us up under the ring and the people in the stand was running. I mean, she fired that pistol about 4 times. But see, we didn't know she was shooting in the air, but we didn't take no chances of that.
Right.
We was in Cobo Arena. I was wrestling Jesse the Body. I was about 25 years old. And it was all big women in the front row. Big, huge women. He threw me out the ring. You know, at the time we had the Jerry curl. He said, come on, Michael Jackson, come on. You know, and the women said, leave him alone. And he threw me out the ring. I flipped over and landed right by the front row. Them three ladies stood up. And I couldn't see nothing. I couldn't even see daylight. They were standing over me, daring him to hit me. And I'm praying that they don't fall and sit on me. And I'm waiting for him to grab my leg or something and pull me out. He's standing in the ring laughing. So finally, they helped me up. These women snatched me up like I was a dirty dish rag. Zoop! On the floor. He went to throw me back out. Vince was back. Vince was back there laughing. I grabbed a rope. He said, come on, go. I said, no. He was going to throw me back out there. I bet you each one of the women weighed 300 pounds. They was bigger than the McGuire twins. They come to Cobo Arena every show. Well, they was in the back laughing so hard. My dad, he laughed. He sat out. He went to laugh. He said, hey, kid. He said, what's that? I said, I was going back. I said, did neither one of them women have underwear? And they would have sat on the head of it. That'd have been an awesome, nasty fight. I said, don't do that. Please don't do that. was the most fun I had with Jeff and the Body. We did stuff like that. But there's a lot of pranks pulling wrestling. Being a good guy or a bad guy, you can have fun. I seen not only I got divorced, I seen a lot of wrestlers get divorced. Because it's a role play there that you can be too good of a baby face or a nice heel and get yourself wound up in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, that's the thing we don't like for them to know our real name. You get fans letters. You get people knocking on your door. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We played a lot of tricks as being good guys and bad guys just to get a laugh. You know, and some of the laugh is very dangerous. When the fans get mad with you, I've seen rides break out. It was a ride broke in London, Ontario. Prince Muhammad didn't supposed to speak English. Wild Polynesian man didn't supposed to speak English. So I'm walking behind them, so I decide, you know, we don't supposed to be together. They need to go head on. And Murdoch called a woman a B, and she looked right back at me. Now, I'm about 10 people behind him. She looks at them. They can't speak English. She thought I said it. She comes back there shaking her finger in my face. I'm looking at her. I'm just trying to give a piece of cotton candy. And I'm going like, what's wrong? She went got the mountains. They come over there. They said, look, you call this lady now? I said, no. They don't speak English, and I heard the word come out of it. Nobody but him and the man at the stand, he said, this man ain't saying nothing. So I goes back, finally, they beg the lady partner for me, and I goes back to the trailer. We was in the trailer getting dressed. They in there laughing down. I'm like, you about to go to jail. I said, no. You guys do that again. So this is what I did. You seen Icy Hot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I... You know what I? They was back getting ready to get dressed. I decided to take the jar and put in their tights. That's how they pull them up. They didn't feel nothing. They got out to the ring and they tried to, where you going? I said, where you going? Because they feel they've got like a marching around. I go like, what are you doing? I said, we supposed to, let's get it over. They left the ring and ran back there. Yes, they didn't know who did it. They didn't know I did it or not. I was just laughing. I said to myself, payback is something else, baby. They never figured out I did it. One more trick I played on Gary Lawler, Brick House Brown, Anointed Clown, which was Matt Byrne at the time, we was all working for, Kerry Barnett. They was all in the room getting high. So I'm walking around. I don't get high. I'm walking around, trying to find something to do. Like I said, we always got to keep wrestling on the mind. So I peeped in the hotel one in Chicago. We was at Chicago, out by the airport in Chicago here, at the hotel. And they all in there drinking and getting out. So I go around to the room door, and I really bang on like a police officer. Bam, bam, police officer, open the door. I heard toilet flushing, and I ran back to my room. They come down. Jerry Lawler, he comes out, he knocks on the door. He said, hey, Mr. Morris. I said, yes. He said, have you seen the police down through here? I'm trying to hold, I got the towel on my face and everything. I said, I just got out the shower. I said, I haven't seen nobody. I'm on this floor.
Oh, man.
They didn't know nothing about that until I got back to Memphis. So we got to get in that car and leave. And I go like, hey, man, did y'all ever find out who that police officer was? Brickhouse Brown looked at me and said, yeah, I'm looking at him right now. they chased me down every person boulevard. They thought we were racing. I mean, we flew. I'm getting going in and out of the car. I ran the red light to get away from them. You caused us to flush $500 down the toilet. Well, my problem. Yeah, we do stuff like that too. That's the fun part. That's the part about being a babyface in the heel. Cause see, we can't mingle together and be seen together, which is
right.
Called kayfabe. Mm-hmm. If you break kayfabe, the world will know it. You out of there. Yeah, you out of there.
Right.
That's the good part of being bad guys and good guys.
Well, right. We're
coming up on the end of the show period, and I just wanted to give both of you a chance to say what's coming up on your schedules and where people that have been listening tonight can catch up with you and follow you and find you in terms of online kind of stuff, Twitter, Facebook, whatever websites, all that kind of good stuff. So, Bobo, if you'd like to go first.
Yes, we mostly at the same shows with Sierra Grotta, the 21st of December, the 25th of December, January, which coming into the new year, we're doing a Hall of Fame thing for some of the guys that have been in the business for decades, put them in the Hall of Fame, which never been in the Hall of Fame. That's going to be at the Marat downtown in Indianapolis. And then come February, we got one of the Boys and Girls Clubs. We got that date set, but I don't have it in front of me. And then we're going to Salem in there and sign contracts to be able to help those people out in Salem to bring a good show there so the fans can come out and see us. And we had a Marion County Fairground, and we're looking at going to South Carolina. It's a guy that I've been trying to get me down to Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to go to Akron, Ohio, Fort Wayne. Then I'm back in my hometown in May. I believe it's May. I'm back in my hometown, Benton Harbor, Michigan. And that's going to be fun. And just we got about 25 or 30 shows coming up in 2020. And probably more than that because I get calls all the time. I just don't go now like I used to, but I get calls all the time. Hey, can we get you on the show? Can you make it on this date? You know, and I'm a minister, too, and Sunday is kind of hard. Most of the shows run on Sunday. You know, the far-away shows, they run on Sunday, and then I have to get back and go to work in the morning, and I don't like too much of missing church. But we got a couple of fundraisers to do at nursing home, and I'm going to do the one that we done did this. This might sound funny, but we did this fundraiser for a friend of ours, little Bubba. He had seizures. We're going to try to help him get him another dog. To attack that from seizure, letting them know that he's getting ready to have a seizure. He had one pretty bad here about 2 weeks ago. And we're just going to stick our hands out and go around and, you know, and help people and be on a lot of shows and, you know, and don't tell us what we'd be, but we would keep y'all informed. I would have thought to make sure that y'all know that every show that we're going to be at and what we're doing out through 2020. And also, we got tell you about that. We got a big car deal we got to do. We're going to be rousing out a big car show, too.
Very cool. Very cool. And what's coming up with you, Thor?
Yeah.
Context.
On December the 14th, Bo and I and the magical man Santa Claus is going to be at the Southside Flea Market on East Street, handing out some goodies for the kids that want to come out there and see Santa and see some wrestlers and everything. That'll be December the 14th. And then May 29th and 30th, I believe it is, we're going to be at the Square Circle Expo at the Wyndham Hotel.
So y'all going to get a chance to wrestle Santa?
No, we're not going to wrestle Santa. we're just there to kind of, you know, help out, help him, you know, because there's going to be a lot of kids that come out there, and we're going to be kind of like his overgrown elves, so to speak.
Yes. Very cool. Very cool.
Want to beat up Santa. No, we have some guys that want to jump Santa anyhow, so.
Well, so you can make it cool and everything and have Santa whoop both of y'all in the ring. So, yeah, you know, with his magic.
Hey, he probably did because he carry a gun. I don't think I want to mess with that.
If any fans want to find us on Facebook, they can go to MCIW/hotshots. That's our website. Facebook, I'm Thar Bad Blood. so they can find our schedules there, where we're going to be, where our meet and greets are going to be. We'd also like to thank Star Chamber for having us on tonight. We want to thank all our fans and everybody that's listening. And Bo and I definitely want to thank the people that have to put up with our BS every day, our wives. Because to be married to a wrestler that has to train, work out, wrestle, talk about it, sleep it, make phone calls, talk to promoters, they deserve a lot of credit for having to put up with that. And we really appreciate it, ladies.
Definitely. Yes, we do.
Well, that is a good note to end on, especially with Thanksgiving tomorrow. And I do want to wish both of you a happy Thanksgiving. We're grateful to have both of you on the show tonight. It has been an absolute blast for us to get to explore an area we rarely have gotten to look into before. And it's been a great show. And I know that, even over the weekend, I'm sure a lot of folks will be streaming and downloading this as they relax and enjoy the holidays. So to both of you, thank you very, very much. And I will I will sign off and I'll let all of you say your own individual holiday greetings and goodbyes. But Thanksgiving, I'm very grateful to everybody who listens to the Star Chamber show and all creatives out there. You guys definitely are something that we have gratitude for. So thank you and happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And if you're able to listen to us, you have something to be thankful for. Shall we get to talk to you again next week? This is Daniel Dark signing out.
Yes. Night, everyone.
Everyone have a... Bye, everyone. Stay blessed.